What's up, podcast people and soundtrack geniuses around the world? You're listening to The Soundcast, and on this podcast, we talk all things film, television, and video game music. I am Christopher Coleman, and joining me today is...
Dane Walker.
Today is Tuesday, November 19th, 2019, and this is episode 145, where we discuss musical direction of Disney Plus's new series, The Mandalorian.
You can find all episodes of The Soundcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, Radio Public, Google Podcasts. You can send us your feedback at soundcast@tracksounds.com, our SpeakPipe widget, which we really like, or on Twitter at Audio Soundcast.
Welcome back, Dane. It's only been 4 months, 5 months, 3 months, 3 months. August, September, October, 4 months.
You know, but, you know, in this podcast, we age differently.
We were actually only gone for like 2 seconds.
That's right.
But we were just traveling at the speed of light, and we're back.
That's right.
Now.
That's right.
This is as soon as we could do one. I mean... I know August was the last one for everyone else, but for us, it's only been, you know, a second or two.
Correct.
But hey, what can you do? What can we do about time travel? That's just how it works. What do they expect us to do?
That's right. It was a bogus adventure, people.
It was totally bogus. Totally bogus. But what we're back to talk about today is definitely not bogus. And what if nothing else could bring us out of our hyperspace travel than something Star Wars related? If anything brings us out of hyperspace, it's Star Wars stuff.
That's right. So we're talking about Star Trek today?
Kind of. We might as well be talking. Same people involved, you know, it's all the same now.
Oh, my goodness.
But we're going to be talking about The Mandalorian as far as we're into The Mandalorian, which at this point is only 2 episodes. But if you've been under a Death Star-sized rock, The Mandalorian debuted on November 12th, 2019 on the new Disney Plus streaming service. And the description of The Mandalorian goes as follows. After the stories of Jango and Boba Fett, another warrior emerges in the Star Wars universe. The Mandalorian is set after the fall of the Empire and before the emergence of the First Order. We follow the travails of a lone gunfighter in the outer reaches of the galaxy, far from the authority of the New Republic. Of course, it's based on characters by George Lucas, and the original score was from one Ludwig Göransson of Creed and Venom and Black Panther fame. We're 2 episodes in. The first episode is written by Jon Favreau and directed by Dave Filoni. And the second episode is directed by Rick Famuyiwa. So that's going to be our topic today. And specifically, what our reaction is to Ludwig Göransson's choices, along with the producers who obviously gave him direction for the music, for the music. Before we get to our reactions to the music, let's talk a little bit about our reaction to the show itself. So, Dane, how did you come to watch the first episode?
Well, I went to the Disney Plus website, and I gave them my credit card and said, take my soul. And
did they take it?
It feels like it, but oh, it feels so good.
You have your soul on a credit card?
That feels like it too, yes.
Okay, got it. How soon did you watch it? How fast from the time it was made available?
As soon as it was available.
Okay.
That
now
night,
apparently
actually.
It released early.
Yeah, it was out on the midnight before, I watched it that night. Then the next night, the official.
I think it was out for some even earlier than midnight. They started rolling it out on different platforms early.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm not special.
Neither am I. I just happened to hear people talking about it, so I was like, oh, it must be out, because I had no idea when it was debuting or anything. So I just went to the site to see if I could log in, and sure enough, I could. And I was like, oh, so there it is. It was really sketchy, though. I was like, oh, because I didn't know it was releasing early, so I thought, oh, this is it. It was running really poorly. Trying to Chromecast it over to my TV was really difficult. I was like, man, this thing is going to fail. But again, I thought that was, it was supposed to be out or had been out and released and not, you know, kind of in their rolling out stage.
Right.
So I watched it a little bit early. I don't even know what day it was. It was probably the 12th, because I started hearing people talk about it. So, my viewing was pretty much an accident.
It was an accident.
It was.
You had no intention of watching it, and then slam, you were.
Yeah, it just jumped into my face. What did you think of the first two episodes?
The first episode, when I started watching it the first time, it did not grab my attention. I mean, I watched it. I wasn't distracted. It just, I kept thinking, there's got to be more. Please let there be more. There's got to be more to this. It just seems so desolate. You know what I mean?
Very, like, sparse.
Yeah, very. The show itself is just, it kind of, it's slow, and he doesn't really talk initially. And the monster at the beginning that grabs the ship was a clear callback to the old holiday special, the Life Day special.
You mean with the sea monster thing?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hits it with the...
We should say, just spoilers, if you haven't seen either episode, we're just going into spoilers right from the jump, because there's not, the episodes are too short to have a non-spoiler section. So right. Just spoilers from the jump all the way through. So if you haven't watched either episode and you're worried about that, then don't listen to this until you have watched the first two.
Yes. But yeah, it has that, it recalls that holiday special when the first Mandalorian anyone had ever seen showed up.
I am Boba Fett.
That's right. You are my friend.
Which, yeah, friend. I was like, I just rewatched it since you sent me the link to it. I was just rewatching it, and I didn't realize the gun totally taken from that. I didn't remember Boba Fett having a tuning fork as a gun, too. It's like, oh, that's where they got that from. That's cool.
Yep.
Yeah, well, so that's, don't tell me about episode or two yet. My reaction to episode one was, I was very underwhelmed by it. I was just kind of waiting. I was like, okay, I dig the look pretty much. I'm just waiting for some meat to come in here. And not until the last minute or 30 seconds did my attention get grabbed. And I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yes.
What's going to happen now?
Right.
And it's over. And I was like,
I know.
You know, everything before it was, you know, setting mood. And I mean, you're not really getting too much character development on the Mandalorian. It's just kind of like, he's just a dude who doesn't talk much. He's a bounty hunter. He can fight. He can shoot.
Right.
But that last 30 seconds was like, oh, and I guess even Disney Plus has come out and said, look, the end is not even a spoiler. Go ahead and talk about it. That's what apparently came out today. They're talking about it. So Baby Yoda, or whatever he is or she is, I assume it's a he.
It's Little Yoda or Yiddle.
Yiddle? But there's Yiddle. A Yaddle.
Well, it's Yaddle, but this is Yiddle. Because it's Little Yoda.
Are they Jewish?
Wow. Yes.
It sounds like, oh, never mind.
They're Yiddish.
Yeah. I was like, oh, he's cute. And, oh, you know, is he going to be a little force baby? Or what's he going to, what? It just immediately launched 1,000 questions in my brain. Who is he or she? What's going to happen to him? I had no questions in the episode up until that point. I was just like, okay, people talking, action.
I did like the bounty hunting droid. That was fascinating. Like, it was just cool to see.
Yeah.
It just was cool to see him moving, because in the movies before, he just stood there.
Yeah.
You know. So this, it was like, oh, that's cool. That would have been neat to see. You know.
I guess because I'd seen it in the Clone Wars, it was less. I mean, obviously, it wasn't.
It wasn't live action.
Live action, yeah. But it's still like those type of robots. So it's just like, oh, okay, it's one of them. I mean, what they did with him was pretty cool, though. Episode 2, what did you think about that?
Oh, I thought it was cool. It was short. I think I've reached the point, and I think Disney has reached the point where they've realized when they mess around with the original characters, there's going to be bias to one side or the other of it, right? So all the Jawa stuff kind of got them a little bit. I was like, you kind of turn them into little, you know, losers. I don't know. I just thought they were cool, you know, like, oh, Utini, you know, and they ran around and they did all their cool little things and they were annoying and it was cool. But then they had to eat that egg.
Yeah.
Like the egg. I was like, ew, stop eating the egg. It's like, let's have group Thanksgiving around an egg.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I was sort of like, what's going to happen to the Yiddle in his little cradle? The Yiddle's cradle, the fact that it kept moving along with him, that was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when the surprise, the Yiddle's surprise abilities, he's just so flipping cute. Like, mm-hmm. if you don't like the show at all, just watching him is, like, worth it. I'm like, I pay $7 a month to watch that thing walk around.
Wow.
He's so cute. I mean, like, his
don't
eyes
don't give
are
them
cute.
Any ideas, man. They'll
I know,
just come
right?
out with a spinoff show called Yiddle Walking Around.
But it just, he's just so cute, and his eyes are cute, and it's just like, this is the best thing. And, you know, to have him compared to this big fighter brute, it's kind of, it has its own little weird offbeat humor.
I've heard others compare to this, which I didn't see it, but it is a very good comparison to Lone Wolf and Cub.
I've heard that too.
It's like, yeah, that's pretty much what they're doing here, which, yeah, there's worse things you could be inspired by.
Sure.
I think it was weird. It's like, why did you take the baby on the trip with you? I mean, you could have left him with the Ognot, you know.
Right.
Or maybe you didn't trust him. I don't know. I just thought it was... Yeah, Nick Nolte. It just seemed odd. Why would you bring a baby with you to fetch an egg in a scenario you have no idea, especially when the baby's worth apparently a bunch?
Well, that's why he took him with him, because he was afraid the Jawas would take the baby and...
I guess that could be
he would lose his, whatever that thing is, his tag.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I did find the second episode mildly more interesting, but still underwhelming, especially in its length. I was interested because of the Baby Yoda, and I just like, okay, let's see what's going to happen with this. And, you know, and it was mildly interesting, but the Jawa stuff was like, you know, just kind of like... I didn't really care. I mean, I like the Jawas as they are, even though these... I don't know what planet we're on. I assume it's not Tatooine, but these are Jawas in black robes and not brown robes, so I guess
it's
a
Tatooine.
Different... They didn't. They don't say. It's not clear.
I know.
But
it's
they are...
It's Tatooine. We all know it's Tatooine.
With Disney, you know, they just take the same planets and call them different names. I would be surprised if it's Tatooine. If it was... Why not say so? Unless that rumor about George Lucas owning the rights to certain things is true, or getting paid every time they use it. That could be.
I think it's true.
I think it is, too, because it makes things make sense. Mm-hmm. If it's not true, then it's even worse. Their writing is even worse than I thought. But so I don't know where they are exactly, but I was only mildly interested not very interested in the Jawas, but interested in Baby Yoda. So... I was still underwhelmed. I'm like, if I never watched another episode, I'd be fine with it. But now that I have it for at least a month, you know, I'll check it out, you know, when the next one comes out.
I think, to be honest, that's how these first two episodes felt. It almost could have been one episode.
Easily.
And you almost wonder if they were like, let's try this and see what happens. They filmed that whole thing, and then they were like, ooh, we like it. Let's see let's take it further.
Yeah.
Because it does have a sort of satisfying little... end.
It does. I think you're right. I think those two combined would have made for a much more satisfying experience. And that's what I think. What may happen is if you watch all of it and you binge all of it, it might end up being a pretty good experience. But going 30 minutes or 40 minutes at a time once a week is just, it hasn't been very satisfying for me yet. So we'll see. You know, I'll give it another month or another 3 weeks, and then sounds like it'll be over by then anyway, from what you said.
Only six more episodes.
Yeah. So that means they're releasing them more than once a week? Because you said
it ends
by the Rise of Skywalker.
Let me check this.
Okay.
Ooh, the last episode is Friday, December 27th.
Okay. All right. So it goes through December, essentially.
So they're very smart. Episode 7 will come out Wednesday, December 18th, leaving Friday for you to get your Star Wars on the 20th when The Rise of Skywalker comes out. Mm. And then 7 days after that, you get Episode 8.
Episode 8. Oh, the final episode.
Yeah.
Okay. I wonder if there'll be any kind of connection or anything that...
Chris, do you really wonder that or do you know that?
I wonder. I wonder if there'll be something in Episode 8 that somehow is referenced in Rise of Skywalker or vice versa. You know what I mean? Something.
Yes. Yes, Chris.
You think
that will happen?
You think so?
Oh, of course.
I mean, it's probably something minor like, oh, that planet. We saw that planet in...
No, Yiddle will show up and save the day at the end of the movie.
That can't...
Rey is like getting beat down and Kylo Ren is crushing her. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, there comes this little green Yiddle.
That would be awesome because it would be ridiculous. But
I want to know if the Yiddle, when he speaks, sounds like Yoda, but it's like the chipmunks.
I have no idea. He does coo and awe and stuff in there, so that's what he sounds like.
He is the cutest 50-year-old I've ever seen.
Maybe so. Next to myself. If I do say so myself.
You are quite the cute 50-year-old, Chris.
50-year-old. Yeah, we're the same age. So that's why I connected with him when I saw
him. That's right. You're like, oh, I have to watch
that dude right there. Same age bracket. let's talk about the music then. Before we get into the music itself, how did you feel when the announcement was made, oh, long ago, that Ludwig Göransson was going to be writing the score for the series?
You know, I wasn't sure what to expect. I mean, Black Panther was great. I think Creed is great. Mm-hmm. You know, his ability to... He's done two things. One, you know, his ability to capture a sound that existed in a genre already or existed in a series already, he'd done that, right? Mm-hmm. So Creed is like, it's unique to the Creed movies, but it's also so Bill Conti, right? So it fits the Rocky series sound. Mm-hmm. And then to do Black Panther, where he, you know, literally world built by going to Africa and... you know, capturing these sounds and then doing things with them. So having that, it's like, well, whatever he does with, you know, The Mandalorian is going to be pretty cool. At the same time, he's also big into his synths and his sampling and his organic playing. So where it was going to go kind of made me a little nervous because he has not set himself apart as, you know, the second coming of John Williams. So I didn't know where it was going to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was pretty excited myself. It's like, same reasons as you. He'd done really great work on Black Panther and Creed. And so, hey, you know, we know Star Wars is going in some new directions. And what better person to take it in some new directions than Ludwig? So... I was pretty excited about what he might do for this series. Expecting, you know, hey, probably faithful to some degree with what's come before, but then putting his own spin on it, you know, a la a John Powell, but maybe not as faithful as John Powell, but somewhat. And so that's where I went in. I was hopeful for the show itself. I was hopeful for the score. So I went in with, for me and Star Wars right now, fairly high expectations. Expected to really enjoy both. So that leads us to, how do we feel about the music and the musical direction? I know you have a lot to say about this. And in fact, a lot of people have had a lot to say about it. We've been on Twitter talking about it for a day or so. I pushed out a tweet yesterday simply asking, are you enjoying Ludwig Göransson's score for The Mandalorian so far? And as of about 30 minutes ago, 374 votes, 73% say yes, and 27% say no. And so that's kind of where things are. By the time you're hearing this episode, the poll will be over. But I imagine it's going to end somewhere similar to what we have now. Usually when the trend gets going, it locks in and doesn't change too much over the course of the last day. Dane, which one did you check, yes or no?
I clicked yes.
I knew it.
I mean, truthfully, am I enthusiastic about all of it? No. Am I enthusiastic about the show? No, it's cool. There's some cool things about it. But all in all, you know, there's some things about the score that I kind of roll my eyes at a little bit. I think that the comments about it being Bill Conti-esque are probably fair. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I was listening to it today and I was like, you know, it sounds like, you know, a Bill Conti thing, but it does its own little twists and turns. It's not,
sure.
It's not a direct, you know, Rocky
sure
ripoff. So that, I think that's a fair argument. The argument that has been driving me nuts is that it's got to be the same as the other stuff we've had previously. It's got to be in that John Williams, you know, genre sound thing. Mm. And I don't think that's a fair criticism.
Hmm. I don't know if maybe some people are saying it has to be. I think a lot of people are saying they would prefer it to be, and I would be among them.
Sure.
I would prefer it to be in a closer to that. Now, mm-hmm. I say that because I'm not really jibing with what I'm hearing now, because it feels very disjointed to me. It feels like there's the Conti stuff is there,
yeah.
Which that makes the least sense to me is the Conti stuff.
Right.
You've got the you know, his signature. I don't know if that's a shakuhachi or what that is, or what kind of woodwind that is that plays his little motif.
Mm-hmm.
You've got his other more action-y. I assume that's another theme for him, is more determined action-y type mm-hmm. Theme.
Mm-hmm.
You've got real just gritty electronic stuff.
No, it's like, did this come from Blade Runner?
Yeah, it's like, the scene that stood out to me the most out of the first two episodes was when he was going to get the egg from the mud thing.
Right.
The mud horn. That was just the worst. I mean, it's so grating and so loud and so obnoxious, and it stands out from anything else in the first two episodes. Now maybe there's going to be a ton more of that as we go through, but things are coming a little bit too strong for me. I mean that was supposed to be a very intense scene,
mm-hmm.
but I was so distracted by the music that I wasn't really into the scene. I was like, good God, what is going on here musically? And there's like stuff when they're traversing whatever planet they're on, like him and the Ognat guy, and that strong Bill Conti heroic fanfare right. goes. I'm like, why is this happening now?
Right.
It's just two guys who we know almost nothing about.
Right.
And they're having this triumphant march across the desert to go to some city that we don't know anything about. It's just right. it just feels very disjointed stylistically, and then a little over the top for where we are in the story.
Sure.
You know, compared to like a Fellowship of the Ring, where you get the first seeds of the Fellowship's theme as they're just leaving the Shire.
Are you really doing this? Are you bringing Lord of the Rings into the Star Wars universe?
I'm making comparison of how short developed, you know. I mean, you know this, but it was so elegantly done, subtly done, But it builds and builds over time where, man, he's just come in guns blazing, and it's like, whoa. And when you have so much sparseness right. throughout the rest of the episode in terms of visuals and dialogue, but you have the music coming in so strong sometimes, it's just like, I can't really get my footing on what to feel and what to connect to.
Right.
Not that what he's put together isn't, I guess, put together in expert fashion, I guess. It's just the pieces don't fit together for me yet, and I find it not a pleasurable experience at this point, two episodes in.
Yeah, I think the word I would use to describe it is it initially feels foreign.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like you're expecting some big, symphonic sort of maybe Kevin Kiner sound, something yeah. along those lines, something
sure.
like that. And then all of a sudden you've got this like synthy thing going on. And so it just doesn't feel right. And initially it really bothered me when I watched it with my kids the second time. It wasn't as grating because I already knew what to
now
expect,
you knew
what, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I did that, that's when it kind of clicked for me that we're watching a different part of the Star Wars universe. And the Mandalorian doesn't, based on the missing thematic elements, for lack of a better term,
mm-hmm.
he doesn't know that the Force exists. So when Yoda, the little Yiddle, does his thing,
mm-hmm.
we don't get that Force theme, which you would have expected. Which
you do get the first two notes of it,
huh?
And then you get two notes of it, and
correct.
Then it goes off,
and then it goes off on another thing, and then you have two. You also have when the Jawas appear, we don't hear the little the
yeah.
Jawa theme thing, right?
Yep.
So you have that, and then I thought, well, he's not in this music is trying to tell us this is a different story, this is a different universe, this is a different. A different place. It's post Return of the Jedi. It has nothing to do with those other stories, so far as we know at this point, right?
Sure.
It may be connected in the sense that it's in the same universe, but it's a totally different storyline, a totally different everything. So if they had scored it the same, to me, it would mm-hmm. have felt like it was a part of that universe, which would have given you all of that. Well, now I'm expecting this, and now I'm expecting this, and now I don't know what to expect in this show, especially with the baby Yoda. I'm like, what the heck is going on?
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
And I was really hoping that he was going to be Boba Fett in the end. It was going to be revealed that he had crawled out of the Sarlacc. I thought that would be the awesome end of the episode. He like takes off his hat and his face is half digested. And he's like, it's Boba Fett!
On a Disney show.
but that's my take on it, is that it's purposely this way. Now, what also bothers us soundtrack guys is that Bill Conti sound doesn't feel like it fits.
No.
And I think that's a legitimate complaint.
Yeah.
But there is some great writing and this great thematic writing. That there's a little riff he's got going. If you listen to the Mandalorian track, it comes on in the credits.
Mm-hmm.
There's this great brassy fanfare right at the 2-minute mark. It's just killer.
Mm.
It's like, man, when is that going to come out in the show? Because it's not in the show. It's just in the credits. Mm.
Interesting.
And that sound fits.
Yeah.
That fits a Star Wars show for sure.
Mm.
So for me, from purely a dramatic analysis angle, they're just coming from a different place, so it's never going to sound, and it really shouldn't, I think.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I can see them wanting to do that. It's like, hey, this is a different story and a different... It's the underworld. It's all of that. It has nothing to do with the saga. And yet, it is still a part of the same universe. And I think the music of Star Wars, as established by John Williams, for me... is the music of that universe. It doesn't mean that it has to 100% sound like a John Williams score. Maybe it's bringing in motifs. I mean, even the Clone Wars movie, I really, really disliked it upon first viewing. I didn't like what Kevin Kiner had done for that because of the elements he brought in that were like, what the... It's very similar to how I feel about this music right now.
Right.
But maybe less so for that one because it was still vaguely... I mean, it still brought in some of the motifs and whatnot. But and then over time, as he did the show... There were moments when it was very Star Wars and orchestration and all of that arrangement, all very familiar.
Sure.
So I can see them wanting to take it in a different direction now because, one, there's only one John Williams, although there are other people who can write in that style pretty well. But at the same time, I'm like, it's still Star Wars, though. And when you have that Baby Yoda moment, anyone who has any history with Star Wars knows what they should be hearing or expect to hear at that moment.
Except
Force theme.
Except what if, I mean, they can't give away that. Like, that's an expectation you're already baking into the Baby Yoda.
That's what I'm saying. Anyone who knows anything about Star Wars knows what's going on. For those who don't, then they don't know, probably don't know what the Force theme is anyway, so it's just a theme of music, right? But for those... And I would say the majority, I would guess the majority of people watching The Mandalorian on this early probably have a good history with Star Wars
sure.
already.
Sure.
And so it's just like, well, yeah, I know what I'm going to hear now. The little, if you know that's a Baby Yoda, then you know, oh, and he starts doing something with his hands. Like, oh, Force time. You just expect it. And then when it doesn't go, you're like, oh. But that's not the greatest sin in the world. It's for me, it's right now, two episodes in, it's the other stuff. It's like, how is all that going to jibe? Are we going to jump around like that all the way through the series where it's Conti fanfares and the next second it's this, there's like this fluttering sound that goes through, I think it's the second episode or maybe it's the first episode, just this constant electronic fluttering
right.
that just happens. And it's like, whoa, what the heck is that? And then the next thing you know, it's fanfare. And it's like, what the heck, what's going on with this? You know, I don't know how to relate to it. I don't know what the mood is supposed to be. And then it goes kind of comical with the Jawa. It's almost like a Latin salsa rhythm that going on. I'm like, sure. What the heck is going on with this stuff?
Right.
You know, it's so diverse that I don't know how to relate to it, or it makes it hard for me to relate to it. So that's where I have that's where my problems lie right
now. I'm curious, and I haven't ever seen it, but the wolf and the, what, in the cup, what was it? The
Lonesome Wolf and Cup?
Yeah. What's the score like for that?
Ooh, gosh. There's so many of them. There's quite a few films in the series.
But okay.
It's been a while since I've seen the original, but it's pretty typical, I think, pretty typical samurai-type music.
Okay. Because the other thing I felt like they were going for with this score, and it's kind of obvious, is the Ennio Morricone, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, kind of, you know.
Yeah, that kind of comes through with his little motif, right?
Right. And even with the little riff.
Mm-hmm.
The little drum. Yeah. Ba-bum, ta-cum,
yeah. Ba-dum, which is great. If it kind of built from there and things kind of fit into that, I'd be like, okay, that's what it is. I may not be what I like the best, but at least I know how to relate to it.
Sure.
You know, I know what they're going for. Now it just seems to be all over the place, and that's what I find weird.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that it kind of finds its place. You know, it finds its footing, both the show and the music for the show. I mean, I do have hopes that it can improve. Just like Clone Wars, first season, I wasn't really into it. By the third season, I was like, wow, there's some good writing here. Good character development. And now some of the themes like Ahsoka's theme, which I was like, this theme's kind of weak. By third, fourth, fifth season, like, man, every time her motif showed up, it just resonated.
Sure.
And so I know it's possible.
Right.
And that's what I'm hoping for it.
And I'm wondering, too, because I do feel like these first two episodes were built as one thing. I'm wondering if episode 3 we're going to get a different, maybe a whole different take on this stuff.
Now for me, anything's possible with the music. I just don't. know what to expect.
Anything is possible.
I really don't know what to expect. But, you know, I do think, I mean, you were saying something, I don't know if it was in a more direct messaging or in the public discussion about the score, about, you know, what they're, and I'd like you to elaborate on it, what they're trying to accomplish and why the music needs to be this. And if I phrase that wrong, please correct me, but you were saying something that to that degree, that what they were trying to accomplish required this type of score, this type of music.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of unfortunate to me, but in a way, they have to break our perception of Star Wars if they're going to go anywhere with it. If they have any freedom with it to tell different stories, they have to kind of cut how we look at it. You know what I mean? Like, they can't, if we're always looking at it as like this continuation of the whole Skywalker saga. I mean, Clone Wars, Rebels, Resistance, all of these things link up to those original, what's going to be 9 films. It's really 12 if you think about it, 12 feature films, if you include Solo, Rogue One, and that Clone Wars movie. So, and that sound was defined in 1977, you know? You know, by John Williams with that first downbeat. It was like, this is Star Wars. It's always going to sound like this. If they want to do anything different, if they want to have any type of creativity, they have to do something almost starkly opposite in a way to kind of shake that up. Now, doesn't mean it's always going to work. Doesn't mean it's we're all going to like it. But it, they almost have to, because they've got to break away from all of that, those years, what, 40 some odd years now, of a specific style, a specific storyline, specific characters.
See, that's where I don't understand why they have to, why can't you be creative within the constraints that are there?
You
don't get 100% creativity, but it's just like, okay, if you're going to make a Star Wars show, your aliens need to look like this. Your costumes need to look like that. Those are constraints that have been established from 1977 as well. And because, and specifically for Star Wars, maybe more than any other franchise, the music is such an integral part of what Star Wars has been up until now. Why can't that remain a constraint as well? It's like, nope, this is a part of the DNA of Star Wars. Work within that. Those constraints, do be as imaginative as you can, but work within these constraints.
Right. And then that's the next phase where I say that the musical sound is so connected to that, those 9 films, 12 films, as I keep saying, and all of those other series, that if they used that music, it would not allow this story to exist on its own. We would all be looking for the parallels. How does this belong with that? And I think what they're trying to do is have this be this thing that happened in that universe that has nothing to do with that other stuff.
But it does. I mean, not the Skywalker saga, but peripherally. I mean, you've got Baby Yoda. You've got a IG-88 type, you know.
When you got the Rodians jumping out of the rocks, which was freaking awesome, except none of them were Bosk, so it wasn't interesting.
Not Rodians, what are they called? Transdotians.
Right, but there was a Rodian in the cantina.
In the cantina, yes. And I did they finally bring back the flute-playing dude, the little...
Yes.
That's one of my favorite characters from Star Wars.
Very cool.
Never used again.
That was the death mask from what era? Was that the Victorian era death mask that they turned into an alien?
Yeah.
And then the other thing they brought back that I thought was great was him rolling on a pit, Jabba's little pet.
Oh, yeah. They had a couple of them.
Crumb.
Like being eaten or something.
Yeah, he's been cooked on his... And I was like, oh, no.
So they're consciously making all these connections. They're doing that.
Visually, for sure.
So why is it okay visually? But not musically.
I totally understand your point. I just think to give themselves some freedom and creativity, they got to do something else. The other thing, too, is that what if they're scoring this from his perspective?
From the Mandalorian's perspective?
Correct. In other words, the music is reflective of him and where he is in the story, as opposed to the universe.
Well, then he's psychotic.
Or he's just lost. He's in the wrong universe.
Something.
You belong in it in Italy, pretending to be in America.
in Philadelphia. in Mickey's boxing club or whatever.
That's hilarious.
I get it. I mean, yeah, you can choose to go one direction or another. To me, it's they just made a choice. We're going to depart from what has been established in almost all other Star Wars fare, and we're going to go this direction. And that's just our choice. It's not like, to me, I don't feel like they have to or they can't make The Mandalorian without doing something radically different with the music. I think you take these very same episodes, these two episodes, I think you could temp them with existing Star Wars music, whether it's Kevin Kiner's stuff or Williams' stuff or Giacchino's stuff or whomever's.
Sure.
John Powell's. And, you know, make it work. Like the whole getting the egg, fighting the mud horn thing. I was thinking of afterwards, after I was like, dear God, that was the worst sequence I've ever listened to or I've listened to in a long time musically. I was thinking about the John Carter scene with the two apes and the music that Giacchino wrote for that. It's visceral, it's threatening, it's powerful, it's strong. It's all the things that he was communicating, Ludwig was communicating in that scene, but done symphonically.
Sure.
And I was like, so much better. Right. And again, personal preference, but it wasn't just like grating and like, dear God, what are these noises coming out of the screen? You know, it was just like, okay, I'm watching a threatening scene between a monster and a man, and, you know, I'm not thinking about the sonics going on. I'm just involved in the scene. You know, so I think they could have chosen to stay within the established Star Wars music realm. And, I mean, maybe you still have the shakuhachi or whatever that woodwind is as the Morricone little motif. I mean, you can work those things in, but still stay closer. And again, my personal preference would have been something like that. But I just think it's a choice. I don't, because, you know, you probably saw some of the interactions I had with some other composers on Twitter that were like, franchises must evolve, music must evolve.
Correct. But
it must. And I'm like, why must it? Who says that it has to?
I mean, and I guess that's what I'm trying to say is, like, if they want any, especially if you're a composer coming into that, if you're going to always have to live up to this one standard, then number one, for licensing purposes, if that licensing thing exists, there's a whole mess going that's going to go on, you know, if they have to keep doing that. So they have to have something new, 100%. Could they have done it all in that sound? They could have. I think it wouldn't be as serious. Does that make sense? I think that the
tone, you think
the tone wouldn't, I don't think tonally it would look right.
Hmm.
And when I say this, I'm not saying that if they had scored it the other way, I wouldn't be screaming and jumping up and down with absolute pleasure and glee.
Sure.
I'm just saying that to me, it makes sense that they've made these choices because of what they've got to do going forward. And what they're trying to say with the show, that this is a lone guy. It's desolate. It's different. It doesn't belong in what you've already seen.
I see what you're saying there. I think, one, I still don't know if I can buy that they've got to do this thing. They've got to go this direction. I still think they can do that, what you're saying. It just feels like they've gone so far.
Yes. Now, that part I agree with you. I do agree with you, but
you know, keep it in the same, you know, area code. You know, it's just like we're doing it, and man, we're just gonna go for it. It's not gonna have any connections to anything.
Right. Well, that, it does. But, Rocky, but
well, anything in this universe. You know, it's just. And that was completely unexpected for me, that it was going to be that far.
When I was watching the first episode and that first time that little Conti-esque thing started happening, I was like, what is happening to me?
Yeah, very out of the blue. And it's, I know other people have already been breaking it down. Oh, it's not Conti at all. It's his own thing. Whatever.
It is his own thing, but he flipped and orchestrated it like he was Bill Conti, and it sounds exactly
it's evocative of Conti.
Yeah.
Immediately. That's undeniable. I mean, maybe it isn't technically when you break down everything, all the notes.
Right.
But when I hear it, I hear Bill Conti.
Yep.
And someone put his music over the Rocky training scene.
No, are you serious?
It is perfect. It's so good. It's like, yeah, pretty much.
That's so bad. Oh, we're such cynical people these days.
Well, I mean, you know, somebody had to do it.
Yeah, I guess the thing is just I want it to play out. You know what I mean? Like,
sure. And it will.
Yeah. And see where he goes with it. I mean, it could get to the end. I could get to the third episode and be like, this is the dumbest thing Disney has ever done. You know what I mean? Like, every episode, I'm still waiting to see, what are you going to do with this? Where is this going?
Yeah.
The other interesting thing, though, is I know that John Favreau, whatever. I know that he's a big fan of that holiday special.
Mm-hmm.
Which they paid homage to multiple times with the Life Day comment and the gun and the whole thing with the monster eating the ship coming out of the water, which happens in that animated cartoon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you notice when Boba Fett shows up in that, there's just this weird synth sound?
You saved my life. Thank you.
You are alone?
I have two droids. We've come in search of a ship that crashed near here.
Maybe I can help you. I am Boba Fett. The ship you seek is nearby.
Are the Imperial troops near this planet?
They are here, friend, and growing more powerful.
There's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've wondered if that has been part of his thing that he wanted to do. He didn't want it to be...
Wouldn't surprise me.
You know what I mean? He was like, he's just his own thing. He's not, you know...
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he wasn't influenced by that. Did you call him Boba Fett?
I did. I feel sad now.
I can't let that slide, bro.
I know.
he may have been, but you also get clear lifts from A New Hope score in
that. Well, that's all they had.
Animated. Sure. Sure. But they still introduce something new. You know what I mean?
Right.
They introduce whatever that sound was. So your expectations then going forward is you're hoping you're interested to see how things work out musically.
Yeah, I mean, it would be cool if the little Yiddle does really, because like he does this little force thing and then he just immediately collapses, you know, which was also very cute. And then they're like, gosh, he's still sleeping. That was just hysterical. But when he gets, maybe there's a point of where he's like, does something really massive with the force and they bring it in full scale.
Maybe.
At the end.
I mean, they hinted it. They hinted.
Right.
And didn't go there.
Right. I mean, like, it's like he kind of has force powers, but not quite yet. He's still young.
Well, he lifted a whole friggin' mud horn.
But that's not an X-Wing.
But it's pretty big for a little teeny guy.
Yeah.
That's, you know, the stuff about, like, forgetting that the Force exists or Jedi were around, you know, in the course of 20 or 30 years. I just don't buy that. I don't buy that a society would forget that fast after thousands of years and generations of it in 20 or 30 years. It's like, oh, I never, what's happening? How is he doing that? You know, or the Jedi that's real. Like, well, yeah. Did someone erase every database in the galaxy? I mean, it's
but
it's
what
kind
about
of
all the people that like were just on these planets and they never got off and they never heard, saw? You know, it was all rumor and conjecture. They didn't any like they're like a lightsaber. What's that?
When you're talking about a Mandalorian who flies a spaceship around, obviously he's been around. He's not going to be like, oh, what's how or an Ognat. Who's an old Ognat? What's happening? What's going? It's like, come on. I mean, it's like, does anyone know that Ronald Reagan was almost assassinated? We didn't forget. Who's Ronald Reagan?
You know, I hate to
what
tell
happened
you this, Chris,
30 years ago.
If I talk to people in my office who are in their 20s, they don't remember that Ronald Reagan was assassinated.
He wasn't assassinated.
Or that there was an assassination attempt. Wow, that's terrible.
Which parallel universe did you hyperspace in from? But you know what I'm saying. It's like, come on. That's just people not knowing history. And I guess that's what they're saying. But something that big, something like, you know, that's one historical event versus, did you know gravity existed? What? Gravity? I never knew. No one ever told me. You know, I don't know. Those are just small issues I have with some of these new things. But my hope is that it gets better, especially in my next few weeks that I have left, and the score kind of coalesces, and maybe I can come to embrace it. As of now, I'm a little ways away from embracing either, but I'm not just outright rejecting it and just be like, it's awful, it's the worst thing. There are parts of it that are pretty bad, but I have some hope because Ludwig is a talented dude.
That's the other thing, too. There's so many times this keeps happening with different things right now where people, you know, start bashing on a composer. I'm not saying that you're doing that. People are bashing on a composer for a series or well, it should be like this or it should be like that. I'm like, he knows what he's doing. You know what I mean? Like, they're all telling him, we want you to do it this way. We want to do it. And he tries it and they go, we like that. And he sticks with
sure.
it, right?
Sure.
So why can't we trust our composers?
Well, I think we do. I think most of the time the discussion is about preference. I would prefer this or that.
Sure.
Right. And so on the one, and sometimes people, even if you say, I don't currently like what I'm listening to, well, you need to be open, be wider, broader, and accept more things. No, I don't. I like what I like.
Sure.
And if I don't like something, it's completely fine to say I don't like it. And
right.
As it is equally fine to say, I like it.
Right.
And I'm not going to tell you, you need to be more close-minded so you can only like Star Wars music that's only existed ever before. No. But see, it seems like people interpret saying I don't like something as an attack or something else. And it's sometimes, you know, it is,
and that,
not always.
And some of that has to do with communication issues, right? Like,
sure.
The other day I was doing something and reading something on Twitter and watching something blow up. And I realized that it wouldn't have happened if the guy had not used the word, well, this is just dumb, mm-hmm. right? So, because as soon as you use that phrase, it's like, you just told anybody that likes that thing
right.
that they're just dumb.
Yes.
So now it's personal.
Yeah. It comes to a phrase that I've been just tweeting randomly on occasion, and that is disagreement without judgment.
Right.
It's fine to disagree. You don't have to judge the person that you disagree with.
Correct.
But so many times it goes from disagreement immediately to, I disagree with you and you're an idiot. You know? It's like, leave the judgment out. It's fine to disagree.
Right.
But the judgment part is what makes everything blow up. And now people are hypersensitive. Even when there is no judgment, they
assume
they,
it's there.
They put it in themselves.
Sure.
And it's like, well, no. All I asked in my poll was, do you like the music so far? And
right.
people were like, oh, why are you judging? All I asked the question was, do you like it or not? But
right.
people read into it so deeply. And it's like, no. I mean, you're asking, it's only two episodes in. Yeah, that's why I said so far. Because that's all we got. So I'm asking, do you like it so far? Well, how can we judge it based on two episodes? We can, based on two episodes. It's completely fair to do that. We're not making we're not judging the whole thing. We're just judging the two episodes. So, you know, everyone is super hypersensitive on Twitter and elsewhere. But just if we could all understand, disagree without judgment.
Yes, especially when it comes to composing and scoring and the fans, all of us soundtrack fans and the analysis we do, we have our preferences.
Sure.
And we forget that it's also a job and this guy's got to go do what he's
yeah,
told.
Yeah, he's got to do what he's told.
And we can sit and we be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe, you know, da 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 da. And it's like, wait, step back a minute. Let's, you know, give the guy a break.
In any case, I think we've talked it through pretty well. It'd be really interesting to hear what our listeners think about the Mandalorian score so far, and even the Mandalorian, the two episodes that are out. And you can let us know by a multitude of methods. The first being, hit us up by email at soundcast@tracksounds.com. Use our SpeakPipe widget on our site at thesoundcast.com or our Twitter handle, Audio Soundcast. If you want to reach me, you can do so at C. Coleman on Twitter. If they want to reach you, Dane, how can they do so?
You can get me on Twitter at Maestro Dane. And my website, I am going to take it down and redo it. But you can go to danewalkermusic.com, and I think some of the Flash stuff will work. I don't know. I need to update it.
Nice.
You can go to SoundCloud and find me, Dane Walker Music, Maestro Dane. Yeah, that's how you can find me.
Awesome. Well, thank you for listening to episode 145. We appreciate your listenership, and until our next episode, we have spoken.
Well, here's one rumor about The Mandalorian that I have heard.
Is it a spoiler rumor?
It's, well, I don't know if it's a spoiler because it hasn't come out. I don't know.
But it could be right.
So yes, it's a potential spoiler. Possibly. It's that the toy has a lightsaber.
What toy?
The toy, the Mandalorian toy, has a lightsaber. This is what I've heard.
Is it a blue lightsaber?
I'm wondering if he's the one that finds Luke's lightsaber. Or clarification, Anakin's lightsaber cut out of Luke's hand, clarification that went with Luke's hand.
But see, then if they do that kind of stuff, now you're in the Luke Skywalker saga.
Exactly. And then that's when the music has to 100% connect.